The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay, so again, welcome to the Dharma Practice Day and to this series of Dharma Practice Days on the five hindrances. And I'm looking forward to this year exploring the hindrances. They are very central to mindfulness practice because the tradition takes them to be the primary inhibitors of mindfulness, obstacles to mindfulness. I'm sure you can pretty easily find other obstacles besides the five, and you can wonder, why isn't my obstacle included in this great list? Shouldn't it be an equal opportunity list? And I don't have a good answer for that. Sometimes people will try to squeeze every other obstacle into the list of five. The best answer that I come up with is that one of the functions of this list is to describe the biggest hindrances to getting really well concentrated. And so as you're starting to get concentrated, a lot of the normal worries and concerns of life, fears and stuff that might normally be an obstacle, will fall away. But these are particularly five tenacious things that the mind, even when the mind is starting to feel pretty present, will easily slip off the present moment to go in this direction. So it slips very easily into pleasure or the desire for sensual pleasure. It can do that in gross ways, of course, big ways. But even when the mind is very concentrated, pretty concentrated, pretty much able to stay in the present moment somewhat, some little movement or desire towards more pleasure in meditation or lingering with the pleasure that's there can derail a person from staying on track. So perhaps that's the why this list is limited the way it is. It includes five things, and while I'm saying they're somewhat limited, they are pretty also inclusive of a lot of the things that people have to deal with in not only meditation but also in life. So sensual desire is the first, and it's a lot of teachers will expand this to include all desire. And any kind of desire can certainly cause problems in our life if we get caught up in it. But somehow the tradition says that sensual desire is a particularly dangerous one for meditators. The second is ill will. And there are some people who distinguish between anger and ill will, aversion and ill will. Some people say aversion. Sometimes this second hindrance is called aversion. And some people will say that it shouldn't be called aversion because there's healthy aversion. Aversion means turning away, literally. And there's healthy ways of turning away. And so it shouldn't be called aversion, it should be called ill will. It's somewhere in there. And then the next one is almost universally called sloth and torpor, words we usually don't use in English anymore. And then the fourth one is, there's more variation there, but it's usually the first pair is restlessness, and the second one is either anxiety, worry, remorse, something like that. And then the fifth hindrance is doubt, or uncertainty, or vacillation, or something, indecisiveness. So these are the very powerful forces, and they can have huge impacts in people's daily life. People make huge mistakes in their daily life when they're caught up. There are people who have certainly pleasant things happen to them when they follow after sensual pleasures. Sometimes you get pleasant pleasure as a result. But there's plenty of examples in our society of people who pursue some kind of sensual pleasure at the detriment of themselves and also other people. And ill will, I think, is easier to see, except people sometimes rush in the defense of ill will because that guy deserves it, or it's a way of protecting myself or something. The idea of justifying or defending any of these hindrances is a little bit dangerous enterprise, but there's no need the primary rationale in meditation to address this and overcome them is that if we are caught in their grip, you cannot develop concentration. You cannot really be fully present. and you can't see very clearly. And so if you want to get concentrated, if you want to be fully present, and you want to see clearly what's happening, these five forces somehow have to be settled enough so that the meditation can go forward. Then again, now outside of meditation, there might be times when some of these might be appropriate. But more often than not, we're not free when we're in the grip of these forces. And so to free ourselves from the grip of them is a big part of Buddhist spirituality. There's a beautiful analogy for the hindrances. If you want to see your own face by looking into a pan of water, if the water is clear, then you can see yourself clearly. If you fill the pan with colored dye, like red dye or blue dye or whatever, then you don't see yourself clearly. Maybe you can't see yourself at all because of no reflection. If you heat the pot up, and so the water is boiling, it's going to be boiling so fast that you can't see it. You can't see any reflection. If you go to the local pond and get a whole bunch of, dredge up a whole bunch of algae and scum and put it on top of your pot, you're not going to be able to see clearly as well. And if you, if the wind is blowing strongly across the top of your pot, it's also going to be stirred up and you can't see clearly. And if the pot is, if you go out and get a whole bunch of mud and fill it up with dark, you know, heavy mud and just kind of, you know, it's also going to be somehow so polluted that you don't get a clear reflection. So the hindrances work in the same way, that if you want a clear reflection of yourself, if you want to be able to see clearly what's happening, when you're when the mind is colored by sensual desire, it doesn't see. When it's colored by, it's like having all this dye, rose-colored glasses. If we see, if we're boiling over with ill will, we can't see clearly. If we're so weighed down with the sludge and algae of sloth and torpor, we can't see. When the winds of restlessness and anxiety go through us, we can't see clearly. And when we're lost in doubt or uncertainty or indecisiveness, we're also kind of heavy, weighed down, mucky feeling, that kind of like the water filled with mud. So as we go through this year, my hope is that you'll become familiar, very familiar, with the five hindrances. We don't want to dismiss them too quickly or let go of them too quickly. What we want to do is study them, get to know them really well. And as we have a deeper understanding, fuller understanding of them, I think then wisdom will operate much more easily through you, and your own ability to become free of them will become easier and easier through that understanding. So we're going to explore these over the year. And today we'll talk about the hindrances in general, and in the afternoon start talking about sensual desire. Then next month we'll do more sensual desire, and then the following two sessions we'll do ill will, and then the rest of the hindrances I think get one day each. But if you can, you know, I kind of figure that the first two are pretty big, useful to explore. These Dharma practice days are designed to be to explore the Dharma or some topic of practice in a wider variety of ways than just hearing a Dharma talk or just meditating or reading or something. But it's meant to be quite interactive as well. And so in the different days, we'll explore the Dharma in different ways. And it's kind of, I think, a little bit like what it's like to be in a traditional Buddhist monastery, where they don't sit the monks down and have dyads and group discussions, but there's a lot of discussion among the monastics, the practitioners in the monastery, informally, where they have a chance to talk about, oh, do you hear what the abbot said, and what do you think of that, and how does that work for you, and so there's a lot of sharing of information, of experiences, of wisdom, of understanding, and that's a lot of the way the growing and developing works. And I would say that in most Buddhist monasteries, most of the learning happens among peers, than it does from the, you know, from the abbot down or someone. So we'll do a fair amount of interactions here. There'll be discussions. We'll break into groups. We'll have dyads. We'll have sometimes little exercises that we'll share in different ways. Also, we can explore this. And then at lunchtime, we'll have talking lunches. If you'd like, of course, you can go off and be by yourself if you want. But if you'd like, we'll set up tables inside and outside, and you can hang out. And with the hope that developing community, developing relationships with other practitioners is very helpful for your practice. And so that's part of what we'll be doing as well. That's the idea. Any questions? Yes?
When you say sensual desires, are you also including sense desires or just sensual in terms of sexual lust?
Any senses, any of the senses. So the question is, when I say sensual desire, do I mean sexual desire or any desire or any pleasure having to do with any of the senses? And it's clearly any of the senses. Include sexual desire and pleasure, but any of the senses, including the in Buddhism, the mind is a sense door. And so there can be mental pleasure that's a form of sensual desire as well. So we'll get into all that starting in the afternoon. The other thing, in order to support you in this year, those of you who are interested in this kind of support, to kind of go into it more fully, I'll provide you with, at the end of the day, some guided reflections for this month, things you can think about and contemplate, perhaps talk to friends about, and then also a series of practices or exercises to do around the hindrances. One for each week. They're kind of dated for the particular week, so you can kind of take this on for a week and explore this particular topic. And the plan is to do that for the whole session, the whole year that we're together. And I also have quotes from the Buddha on the hindrances and also on a little bit on sensual desire. So it might be interesting for you to take those home and not just read them once, but it might be interesting to actually read them a number of times in the course of the month. I find that repeated reading of Dharma text passages tends to work on me, allow it to work on me in some deeper way, fuller way, and I get to explore it. And even if I think I understand it at first, I find that my understanding changes and shifts and deepens. I go back and visit the same thing over and over again. For one thing, I start applying it in different areas of my life that didn't occur to me the first time I came across it. So that's the plan. Okay? So let's start with a meditation. If you want to stand for a minute and stretch, because you have sitting already, you're welcome to.